Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And welcome back to Roll to Cast. We are an any-winning variety TTRPG podcast that plays a different game system for each season of our actual play podcast, but we also interview the creators and minds behind the games that we play. As we are wrapping up, this is the final post-season episode for our Die RPG season, when the party's over, and we have the good fortune to be joined by a very special guest. But first of all, if you don't know us, what are you doing? This is the last episode of the season. Go back, listen to When the Party's Over, and you'll know that I am Ellen. I was the GM for this season, or I also played Allegra, and I'm joined by Phil.
Hello, yes, I am Phil, and in the season I played Toby, or the Neo.
Hawk. Because we had to have four names apiece. And we have the immediate, the great fortune to be joined by multi-award-winning, multidisciplinary writer of just a few things you might have heard of: The Wicked and the Divine, Phonogram, Once and Future, Uncanny X-Men, Young Avengers, Darth Vader, Someone Please Stop Me. I could go on and on and on. Creator of the Die comic with Stephanie Hans doing the art, and creator of the Die RPG with Rowan, Rook and Deckard. It's Kieran Gillen!
Howdy.
And the crowd goes wild.
Hello!
I'm immediately, before like various people join me, I'm about to say, I am co-creator of the Die comic. As in, like, Stephanie is co-creator. Like, that's absolutely one of these kind of, like, if I don't say that, I will be murdered on the internet.
So, like, Stephanie will track you down and murder you.
Yes. No, no, I think that Stephanie would have to do it. She has agents in these things.
Oh.
And they, you know, it's... there'll be a crowd. It'll be very exciting. Anyway, hello.
Hello, Kieran.
Hi.
So happy to have you. I have a little question to kick off that is so not that relevant. What's your favourite die? No system? No system at all? Just what's your favourite type of click-clack math rock?
I'm literally holding a D20 at the moment. I've, you know, I've got, finally got the ADHD diagnosis. I have an enormous D20, which I use as a... Which, A, I use as a fidget tool, and B... it sort of was referenced for die when I was actually writing it. I actually had the D20 so I could look and see the regions and work out where the maps are.
Oh,
so right. D20 is probably it, even though most of the games I play don't involve a D20. So apart from die, obviously, which does.
Yeah.
Hey, we're a sort of a non-D20 podcast ourselves. So yeah. what is your favorite RPG, or what are you playing at the moment RPG-wise?
Mm. Oh man, I hate the word favorite. It's one of these things that...
Okay, well, what are you playing at the moment?
I will engage with the concept of favourite.
Okay,
at length.
Go, yeah, yeah.
But it not necessarily means I will get to one.
Yes.
So the only game, so I've got an 18-month-year-old and I've been travelling. So the only actual game I'm playing right now is a mate of mine is running a Conan D20 game, which has been going for like 10 sessions or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, that's about as trad as I've played in a very long time.
Wow.
And it's a giggle. I'm playing basically the Conan character, and I killed a I killed some animal. No, it wasn't an animal. It was a monster. And I held its body up and it made everyone else run away. And that's there's rules for that. And I quite like a trad game that has rules for holding bits of corpses and making scaring people with them. Because that is pure Conan energy. Last thing I ran properly was I ran a Trophy Gold campaign. Like, I've run 12 episodes of Trophy Gold, which is amazing. It's a game I adore.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know that one. And we've tried ourselves.
So good. You flip out. Like, don't start me over Trophy Gold. It's like, in fact, I wrote a review in my newsletter of it, so really breaking down why I like it. It's the Gauntlet published it. It was up to the Ennies this year, best rules writing, I think.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And, you know, I think it got my vote. I'm not quite sure because Passiones de Passions is also a sub, so I genuinely can't remember who I voted for, which is so good as well.
That's on my list.
You know what I mean? Honestly, I played it, and it's in fact the one I played was we had a cowboy setting, so it was like a retro kind of feel. And I was playing the very dramatic woman who owned the bar and walked around in red a lot and wept, and it was lots of kissing. It was glorious.
Was your name Scarlet or something?
Yeah. it was something like that. I forgot. I don't speak Spanish, but I think I probably looked up the word for red in Spanish in that way.
Left her lipstick all over.
Lady Roja. So
I got the current class, La Belleza, I think. And it's they get bonuses to rolls if everyone's looking in when they enter the room.
Oh.
So it's basically, they're all about making dramatic entrances.
Oh,
and
I love
all the
it.
Classes are like that. If you're doing your thing, you'll get your. Like, there's a character who's basically the innocent character. And if you're in over your head, you get bonuses to rolls. So the whole game is about that.
About playing your trope.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah, yeah. It's really, really strong. It's a lovely bit of design. My favourite game as a teenager.
Yes.
Probably, let's say Paranoia. It's not the game I played most. In fact, I don't think I ever played a satisfactory game of Paranoia. But in terms of like that moment when I realised, oh, wait a sec, this stuff can be art.
Yeah.
Like Paranoia is, of course, is satire. And it's also like the moment, they've got the list of names on the back. It's like Orwell and, you know, was it Orwell, Huxley, Stalin. And it's like, and the Marx Brothers at the end of the list. That, a, that's very funny. But B, like the idea that games can be involved in culture and also games can be culture kind of came from there. Rather, that's the first time I saw something like that. I said, oh, this isn't just other stuff done in games. This is games. working ways to talk about other stuff.
I feel like a kindred spirit in that because we are actors, we are writers, performers, and we have approached the storytelling medium of RPGs in a way that, yes, it's fun, it's a great way to spend time with friends, but it is a vehicle for telling stories with in-depth themes and exploring character. I think it's kind of natural, I guess, if you have that mindset that you wanted to kind of custom build a game where you could kind of, the tools were there to do that. Is that kind of the reason that Die was made, that you wanted a game that could very easily be art?
I mean, like, I'm pausing here as because I think games are art anyway, so I don't think it's that.
Yes.
Mm.
But so, and also, my interest in games is wide, as in, like, there's one of these things, like, what I do is not necessarily always what I love as well, as in what I love is much bigger than what I do.
Yeah.
However, with all these caveats, there's two things I think which are in the reason for Die. One was, I wanted to do something really stupid. Like, it kind of, after I finished Whip Div, I kind of made an oath to sort of, oath is the wrong word, it's not like to the heavens and, you know, cutting my palm.
You drove
offering,
your
you know.
Sword into a stone and you said never
I will
again.
Not rest on I will not rest till I wrote 300,000 words of RPG, which got cut down sensibly. It was to do stuff that only I could do or would do.
Right.
That was after Wicked. It's explicitly a friend of mine called Lee Alexander, who is a writer. She said, like, there's one issue with that where basically it's all magazine driven and it's kind of based upon a variety of skills which are not common. Like, involves me art directing because I used to work in magazines. It involves me basically finding real world journalists and asking them to interview the characters in the comic. But also, those interviews are done for real with me playing the characters in chat with them, so the whole thing is done in an old, because I used to play Mushes back in the 90s, like the whole text-based stuff.
Yeah.
So that kind of level of improvisational role play stuff is not, you know, so if you add up all the skills required, that's not a common bunch, and it's an unusual work of art because of that. So kind of one of the things I wanted to do was stuff that only I would do, and kind of trying to do a first principles RPG from scratch alongside the comic for no reason at all. That strikes me as the sort of thing which not many people do, or rather few people do, and few people do it in the way I did it, because it definitely comes from the second part of the answer, is that what I love about, what I always, part of comics, and kind of why I love games, is I'm fundamentally a punk rock scene kid. I'm somebody who believes in do-it-yourself culture.
Yeah.
I believe one of the great joys of comics is they're cheap, but games is because they are have what they call a low ceiling. It's not a low ceiling, a low floor. It's like you have there's two sorts of gigs. You've got gigs where you've got high stage, where the performers are above the audience, and you've got the low stage when the performers are much nearer the audience. And like punk rock bands are normally low stages. And the idea of a lot of what I do is trying to reduce that. And so much, to skip to another thing, Alex Roberts, I was interviewing her for the back of one of the Die issues, and she had this great quote, which I'm going to paraphrase, is that culture tends to treat us that creativity is hard, that creators are kind of like these kind of godlike beings who come down to us and deliver this. And games don't. Games say, fuck that. You know, games, we can make a world with just a few rules and a few story devices together every evening. There's infinite creativity we all possess. And that's kind of what games do. And what Die does, to answer the question, is this is how I... There's going to be a lot of this, I'm afraid.
No, keep going. It's awesome.
What Die does is me saying, this is how I did Die. In other words, Die is an example of the story. I'm now going to give you the structure that allows you to basically do what I did. So this is how you make fucked up people. This is with needs and desires, and make sure you've now got a group of real world people. Now, here is how you make a world to sort of torment them and tempt them. And then this is how I created a narrative climax.
This was part of what I really wanted to pick apart was the interplay between them. So you say very explicitly at the beginning of the RPG book that I made these two things together. They were conceived of together. So I was wondering like what compromises had to be made or which led the other. Like, so did you kind of come up with characters that were going to have a story and then convert them into game rules? Because it kind of sounds like you had the concept for Die, its world, its rules, and then you codified that. But was there sort of any kind of direction from the other way where you were like, oh, I really want to have this paragon, I better write someone into the comic to embody it?
It's complicated. I mean, the normal...
I'll bet.
What? With a game like Die? No.
Really? The one-liner kind of... The sort of one-liner I've said quite a bit, but it's... For a long time, I wasn't sure which was the tail and which was the dog.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that kind of... Because it's an RPG with a tie-in comic or a comic with a tie-in RPG.
Yeah.
Or and it eventually got to the point where the dog had its own tail and became a kind of dog Ouroboros. And I...
Dog-oribus. And I now, no, sorry, no. Cut that.
I'm going to steal that. And we, and now I kind of see them both of different ways of experiencing the idea that is Die. This pure platonic idea that exists outside the comic and the games. If you kind of have them both, you kind of see Die in more of its weird and infernal beauty. That's good. I mean, because I had the idea for Die, but like, and it very rapidly became a comic, but it was an idea before it became a comic.
Right.
And it kind of comes from the core kind of moment was me thinking about it was me and my friends bullshitting at San Diego Comic-Con in the mall about whatever happened to the kids in the 1980s D&D cartoon. And the idea, oh yeah, they'll be middle-aged now, wouldn't
they? Somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And that core, in the evening, I suddenly had this idea stuck with me. Why is it sticking with me? And it was kind of like, oh, and then part of me disappeared into a fantasy world at the age of 16 and never came out. And how has that damaged me? Like, how has my love of games hurt me as much as it inspired me? And of course, I burst into tears because that's what I tend to do. And then it was like, okay, if I'm upset, I want to write. That's something worth exploring. And that's where the rest of it came from. So like immediately the Sol was the first character. And then Ash followed very quickly. And I sort of built the group of people. But I also, at the same time, was working on, okay, I don't want to just do a straight D&D comic. Because that's not how I roll. I want to deconstruct why. Because if I'm talking about why I fell into fantasy worlds, I'm going to start thinking about, okay, what about these fantasy worlds appeals? So I end up starting doing the world building. And then the world building is very separate from the specific stories of the persona in the comic. Like, at the same time, it's not. You know what I mean? Like, I'm creating the paragons as ways to these characters to express their nature. But at the same time, I'm creating the paragon classes as ways to interrogate classic tropes of RPGs, which, of course, is much more widely. I mean, you're talking about which came first. There's not really any compromises the wrong way. Ideas is the thing.
It's like a flow, yeah. An ebb and flow between the two kind of entities.
Especially reading through we were talking about so much of the book is setting up the GM to go do, like, go do this. Go, you know, prep less than you think you need to, which I find infuriating because some of us aren't award-winning writers, okay?
You won any award-winning podcast. Of course, you know.
Sure. Yeah. I actually did win an award for a play, but I co-wrote that, so I can never feel justified in claiming it. A lot of it is just a manual to kind of kick people off on their own imaginations. I then want to ask, like, die comic versus die RPG, is there a sense that the die comic is the fantasy deconstruction of Kieran Gillen versus the game is whatever fantasy deconstruction you, the players, will bring to it? Or is it more just a deconstruction of the whole genre?
Yes.
Okay, well, we figured that out. Next question.
These are enormous questions in that kind of way. I said yes, but like one of my problems as a comic writer is that I'm the definition of too much. Like when I had the idea of Die, I thought, I know I can make this elegant. This is a character study of six people. Can they come to an agreement? Choose to leave Die? You know what I mean?
Like, none of these guys.
We couldn't.
No, exactly. And of course, and that's why we have drama. And I thought, this is really a great way to delineate character. And then all of a sudden, I find myself, I'm writing the entire history of RPGs at the same time. So like, Die the comic is serving multiple masters. Like, because that's the way my mind breaks. And that's the way my campaigns tend to work as well. However, Die the RPG is actually quite a lot purer than Die the comic. Like, the whole kind of history aspect is there in the structure of the rules and the character classes, but it's less there in terms of the persona. The game is much more about how can we do a character study of these people by externalizing their messed upness. Oh, before I go further, like, a really good thing you reminded there, like, the dog and the, you know, the dog Ouroboros. Like,
dog Ouroboros, yep.
Yeah.
Once again, yes. That's going to turn up in the game now.
Oh, mate, that's going to be so good when I see that and go so...
We did that.
I'll be so annoyed. But in the best way.
The Fallen.
Oh, yes.
Are the originally in the comic as the kind of... I needed a kind of standard villain, something an iconic villain, which is, you know, iconic of the game. And I had the idea and the visual, and I had a half idea what they were. And in the game, I was wrestling with a different problem. I was saying, okay, I've made this really brutal combat system. I don't want combat to stretch out. It's explicitly combat is meant to be kind of in the Gygax Arneson mode, but at the same time, it's pretty quick because it needs to leave space for people to talk in the persona level as well.
Mm.
But also, all this, but like, okay, someone can die really easily.
Boy, could they.
But player elimination shit. Like, what, you know, so I don't have that either. And also in the end game, I want player elimination to be quite quick as well. And it's like, oh, wait, maybe they just get up. And that kind of like, oh no, I'm going to, you know, player eliminations. And then I was, oh, they're the Fallen, aren't they? And of course, they are literally the Fallen. So in other words, the whole idea of the Fallen being dead players came from a problem solving in the game. And then, of course, comes back into the comic as such a huge part of the story. Now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Like, Die felt like exploring a space and discovering what was there rather than... And occasionally ideas converted back and forth, but they basically... As I said, the hologram metaphor before, but I do feel I'm exploring the idea of Die and almost discovering, which is the creepy kind of thing about it.
Well, you do. Well, you write. You write for a lot of, you know, it's established universes. You have your hand in a lot of worlds that other people are deeply invested in from the public side, and also, you know, they've been contributed from by a long litany of different writers and artists as well. Whereas, kind of, Die is your baby. So, was that daunting, or did you sort of? Did you get carried away? I find, you know, restrictions are often the best thing in creativity. They help you kind of like hone your ideas into something. Did you find yourself sort of expanding out infinitely when you were trying to make Die?
Always.
To 20 sides.
20 sides.
A 20-sided die.
Die's unfinished. You know, like, the comic doesn't even explore all the size of the dice. Yes is the answer. But I've done this before. Even though Die is basically... Die sprawled more than I initially intended. It sprawled in a way that... I mean, I always feel quite bad that I want to be... I aspire to elegance and rarely achieve it. But at the same time, I'm really successful. You know what I mean? Like, whatever weird shit I'm serving up works upon people. And the too much is at least part of my brand now. So in some ways, I don't fight it as much. I must admit, I think my next stuff is perhaps a little bit more elegant. But, like, too much is maybe what I do.
I mean, I'm a big fan of overwrite and then edit back. I think that's...
Yeah.
I mean, I aspire to be shit. And in that way, I'm always a bit happy. I've based a career on that.
I don't honestly enjoy it. Like, writing it, like... writing shit than editing is like one of the things I regularly give as writing advice is it's not about inspiration. Like, inspiration, frankly, anyone can write when they're inspired. It's I have a job writing because I can write when I'm not inspired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's about doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, you can always make it better. You know, that kind of, and also, like, at the very worst, writing something completely shit that doesn't work at all. It's like, you know, one thing that doesn't work. You know.
So one of the things we found when playing Die was we made these personas, and a lot of them are, you know, you've given the tools, as you said earlier in the interview, to make some fucked up people with some deep insecurities. And when you make people like that, you tend to draw on your own insecurities. And I certainly found this with my creation, is that I was suddenly playing with some of my very real anxieties and my very real kind of fears in life. And I'm lucky enough that, you know, I've had some actor training, you know, I can separate those sides of me, and I'm used to kind of mining that out. But were you kind of worried about bleed and kind of emotional safety for your general audience, your players, when you were making it?
I'm curious about this too, because I listened to one of your seminars, I can't remember which one, but you said bleed was kind of the point with Die.
I mean, bleed is neither like a positive or negative thing, I think, in terms of RPGs. And bleed is just something to be really fucking aware of. Like, obviously, I mean, like, if you play, talk about the Nordic LARP sort of experience, in many ways, the bleed is the reason why people that do it, as far as I understand.
Yes.
But at the same time, also something to be aware of. So, yeah. I mean, kind of my real fear of Die was the fact that, I mean, there's a lot, if you're someone who's working in the indie space, there's obviously a lot in Die people be familiar with, like a lot. But at the same time, it's a game that some people from outside the traditional indie space will be playing. So I'm aware that I'm introducing stuff for the first time to some people. So, like, the safety tools are really important.
Yeah.
Like, Kiana and Lauren, we got in to do the safety rituals and also have, like, make sure the most possibly messy stuff is there. At the same time, giving really strong, firm GM advice. I mean, a lot of PBTA games say, address the character, not the player. And we explicitly go, no, the opposite. Like, always say, hey, Ellen, how does, tell me about how your persona feels.
Bad if it's this game.
Exactly, you know what I mean? If I just said, hey, Ellen, tell me how you feel. Tell me you've been hurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's pushing the, and the trust. Some of the early, I had a really bad early play test where a player who hadn't ever really done something as emotionally intense as Die was kind of like really kind of like thrown down a hole there. And immediately that was a kind of like, okay, more safety proofing here.
It's a fine line to walk, isn't it? Because you want an experience that talks to people and they feel deeply, but you also don't want to kind of put them at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, all that is highly on my mind. I was very aware that, especially a class like the Dictator, I sometimes felt I was pushing a revolver across the table or something, you know, like that kind of, like,
which is a different TTRPG.
Yes. See, but at the same time, like, the idea that this is, games always do kind of, I mean, obviously Die makes it really explicit.
Yes.
But, like, games are always kind of mining a little bit. That's what creatives do. We kind of mine, like, our feelings and turn them up or turn them down. And it's obviously, part of Die is about the question of why do we play games anyway? And, of course, the whole end of the game is people choosing fantasy over reality. And that's, like, one of these fun, do you want a game to continue or do you want the game to end?
Yeah.
And this kind of, like, why are these people playing this game? And, of course, it's that you've put some of yourself into them. It's kind of become, so why do I play games? And that's kind of what I hope people take away from it.
Which kind of leads me into the thing of, this has been one of the most immersive gaming experiences, and we go pretty hard at Rolltocast. It's helpful that we've all had acting training and we've all worked with each other as actors in that respect. So we kind of go balls to the wall in that respect. But all the rituals that have been created for Die lead to such an immersive experience, to the point where we were first role-playing the reunion. That was about almost like an hour 30 nonstop just as our personas. And I guess my question is, how did you come up with that? Because I guess it leads into the thing of, you have to care. You have to really invest for this game to work. And that's a huge buy-in sometimes for new role players or even just some role players. We've all heard the stories of sitting at a table and someone's not into role play, someone's more into the mechanics side of things, and some people really want to go ham with the role play. But if we're not all investing in these fucked up people, the game doesn't kind of work, and the mechanics do that so beautifully. So how did you create these rituals so that bleed can happen but in a really safe safe way to keep everyone immersed and giving their everything in the game.
One of the most careful things of the die design is basically this set, the first session. And the first session is basically a session zero plus a little bit of game. It's one of these bits that the whole kind of first session of rituals is very, very on rails, but in a way that gives you a lot of room to customize. So you start with the persona gen stuff where you ask the questions to everyone. And then you've got this miniature Nordic LARP where everyone embodies the persona and then creates their characters. Then you've got this miniature tutorial about the actual game where you go into the world, have the magic girl transformation moments, have your kind of initial combat, and then you have the cliffhanger of, oh my God, we're in our teenage fantasy world. Like, so that kind of shape is one of these things that obviously is one of these classic things. The first session is the session you playtest most.
Yeah.
So like that's really honed again and again and again. I mean, early in die playtests, like the persona gen questions was entirely open. Like I generally started the game with, okay, what kind of group are we going to be playing? And just work, how do we know it? And, you know, to even have the go to a fantasy world. Go to your teenage RPG world as a core element. That came later in the playtest when I realized, oh no, that works for every group. So like it was originally much more open. So I had the broad shape, but then it was playing better ways to sort of guide people. One of the lessons, of course, I learned for a lot of indie RPGs is that the classic idea of D&D where you make your character, then you get together and you've all got your big sheets of paper. Someone's written 20 pages of the background. The problem of that for a game like Die is no one's not invested in each of his characters in the same way. So for me, it was important, okay, we do Persona Gen and we're making these people together. Because it's one thing important in writing is you don't make characters, you make relationships. Characters only exist in context of every people, because your boundaries of what you do and what you don't do are about that. So if everyone makes it together, A, you're making these connections, and B, everyone gets a chance to chip in. Like, oh no, I could be your ex. Maybe we made out once. Oh no, not ex, maybe made out once. And everyone is of course invested not just in themselves but also the group of people. That's the first step. And the fact the questions really kind of like, you said earlier about narrowing the sheet of paper, a limitation. The fact the questions we designed were like, okay, stuff that drills down and makes people interesting. And of course, you always ask more questions, but these are kind of, we're going to help you make, your people will be broadly interesting if you do this stuff.
I think my favorite was the kind of like, what did you kind of aspire to when you were a teenager?
Yeah, guess what?
And then the following question is, how did that all go horribly wrong for you?
Yeah.
I think that's guaranteed to make something interesting.
That one is my favorite, because especially the one which is the same first question and the split. So it's like, what did you want? And then the second half is, oh, that thing, you didn't get it. And then the other one is, that thing you got, it didn't make you happy.
Yeah, yes. Which is so much worse.
Yeah. Yeah, that worked for Toby really well.
I'm so curious in terms of, I was kind of thinking about, you know, some of your other work being about kind of the way that teenagers use art to either enhance themselves, augment themselves, present their true selves to the world. What makes it really important that we go back to the teenage versions of the personas as opposed to jumping right in with these fucked up adults? There's something very beautiful about, yeah, seeing how the world works its machinations upon these people.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is it about adolescence and why is that so important to die? die the game.
Sending emails all the way through this process. You can't just have a subject line die. You have to say regarding the RPG die or something. Yeah. Just warn the, you know, no, I'm not trying to murder you.
Hey, Kieran, are you ready to die? Are you ready for die?
Yeah. short version is like that. Kind of think that's more the comic side in terms of like the original ideas, and suddenly realize this is a great way to talk about, like, comparing these teenage fantasies to their adult realities. And that was the kind of the one sentence, the idea that this is what I wanted back then, this is who I am now, and that's really powerful, and that's a fundamental interesting story. And then, so in other words, when I was trying to do Die the RPG, it was like, okay, the core story of Die has to be the core story of the comic. So there was rituals. You know, if someone comes, oh, I really like the comic, I need to have, you know, and this is your chance to make your own version of that story, as in, hello, teenagers, then hello, sad adults. You know, so that's the reason why rituals works like that. Of course, you'll note, like, there's all the other personality groups at the back, and, you know, there's all the scenarios. So there's lots of other different ways of playing Die. Mm. Die basically is just take a group of real people, lob them into the fantasy world, see what they'll, you know, see what they really want. That's kind of the structure. So, but the choosing of all those options, because, you know, the options at the back are like people who are workmates, like people who are actually still at school, people, you know, all these other different kind of groups. Choosing that one is explicitly the, I think this is the best one for a single game of Die. You know, that's the thing about when we're building, like, moving Dive from the beta, working with Grant and Zach on this, was this sort of the idea that, like, we'll say if you can play a game of Dive, most people probably only run an RPG once.
Mm.
And I say that not as a bad thing, because there's a lot of RPGs. Like, if you're going to play, you're going to probably play one game of Dive. Like, maybe at least, you know, and we want that game to be as good as fucking possible. So in other words, this is the, if we're going to make a random roll dice that we think this will work for you.
Yeah.
And that's the reason. I think it's just, it's a really strong archetypal story of loss and sadness and melancholia. But at the same time, one of the fun things, it's really adaptable. Like the you're teenagers, now you're adults. Like, the first thing is, okay, how adults are we? Like, are we talking about 20-somethings? Are we talking about 30-somethings? You know what I mean? Like, immediately they change different stories because, you know, who you are at 20 is very different to how you are at 30. 30-something and so on and so forth.
And teenagers are naturally in flux. They're forming.
Yes.
So they can kind of go whichever direction life pushes them.
Yeah. And you do pick up a lot of... Well, you pick up a lot of personas as a teenager. Yeah, you pick up masks.
Yes.
You find an album you love and that becomes you. That becomes part of your personality for, you know, 20-odd years.
Exactly. I see, one of the really fun persona groups are ones where you have mixed age groups. So, like, there's a few of them, I think, in the back, and they're certainly in the further ones we're doing. The idea of, like a family gaming group. That's interesting. Because that's a messed up dynamic. Like, I've just been watching The Bear, and like the Bear Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Still two episodes to go. But like, you know what I mean? Like, drop those people into a fucking die scenario. See what happens.
I feel like The Bear is a perfect it's a microcosm of most RPG groups, where it ends up with everyone like so fucked up by their own traumas and just screaming at each other, trying to achieve the same goal.
You're talking about how hard you're going in. One of the things about die, I think, is interesting. You're saying like why we play games. There's also quite a lot of dice about like the group deciding how it works. Like even like the in-game, like obviously the persona judge stuff is quite deliberately soft. It's as indie RPG as you get. But the in-world stuff is at least looks like a Guy Gax Arneson game. But like the closer you look at it, it's like, oh no, there's so much stuff the players decide. Okay, what does this work like then? And at least part of that goes all the way through Die, in that it becomes, and this is true of all RPGs, but like it's certainly including Die, it gives back a lot of what you put into it. So you as a group of like, you know, actors, serious people who know your shit, are throwing in the powerful character drama stuff. But like if you've got a group of people who are much lighter, Die basically works as Jumanji. You know, you take a group of people who maybe aren't this fucked up. They go to a fantasy world, they go on an adventure, they kill the guy who dragged them there, they fuck off. You know, that's still fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it can be a bit goofier even.
I think you're giving us a lot more gravitas maybe than we deserve, because I instead of saying Phil's character is a local politician, and instead of saying MP, because I wanted his opponents to represent the MPs that he would stand against in life, I accidentally said PM and made him verse up against our Prime Minister from the 2000s. So I wouldn't say we're that serious, Kieran.
if you understand how I run, it's like, it's a mixture between the goofy and the heartfelt. I think that's what I quite like, because the aesthetic in my comics, like, it's pretty fucking dumb half the time. At least part of my thing is like, and part of Die is like, being petrified of your childhood toys, you know, which is silly, but at the same time, it's also primal, you know?
I like this idea that, yeah, all RPGs will necessarily kind of reflect back their members, and Die is just making that explicit. It's like, what if it literally reflected you? What if it literally threw your insecurities back at you and you had to live them? And then I guess, yeah, if you are approaching more gravitas, you're going to have graver things come back at you. So it kind of, I see how that's kind of self-limiting, which is kind of good.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to touch on, which I think is something that you kind of see come up throughout the stuff that you take a lead in, is you kind of play with this idea of divinity, of sacredness. I mean, the rituals themselves are a kind of sacred idea. Is there something that you're trying to kind of deconstruct there, where you're kind of trying to take the sting out of the divine and the supernatural,
the wicked and the divine?
Yeah, I know. I know, right? But that is the whole premise of the wicked and the divine is the melding of the holy and the human.
Mm.
Is that something that you find yourself returning to again and again? And do you know why you might do that?
I think that all my answers are basically stop if it's complicated.
I like complicated. Yes.
I think, I mean, I'm somebody who is, I was raised Catholic. I'm somebody who identifies as atheist at the moment. Not in a particularly angry, boring internet atheist way, just as a kind of, I just don't think it's true. Mm. But at the same time, I'm somebody who understands the transcendence and power of art. Like, there's a kind of, one of the things I got when researching WikDiv is, it's quite a common theory that the idea that art is basically misapplied religion. The idea that we gained religious rituals and then made artistic ones. And I just think that's completely the wrong way around. Yeah. I think religion is misapplied art.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think that's like the way things have, you know, what is most religions but the most best story in the world? You know, the idea that this is a story enough to transform you and make your life about this.
Mm. It's kind of like a all rivers lead to the sea kind of idea that we're all kind of searching for that kind of transcendence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're all different paths to it.
Yeah, a story that means something to us in a way that makes our life worth living. So I'm somebody who absolutely believes in the power of art in that way. And also I'm petrified of art. Most of my stories are also about how art will destroy people. And the dies explicitly. Like, you know, I start by saying, how has RPGs hurt me? It's also, if you read die, it's also about how do RPGs find people. How can you transcend yourself through them? And I'm always interested in the upside and downside of everything. So these are just themes that interest me as someone who's famously, you know, the fact I'm this aggressively lapsed Catholic and my Catholicism is increasingly obvious in my work. But where it came from originally with Die was I was interested in reclaiming the magic of early weird D&D before anyone, because obviously the reason why D&D and RPGs are so big now is they've been demystified. Like, the reason why my wife decided to play RPGs eventually was because Harmontown did that, you know, tiny D&D bit at the end. And she was became, oh, no, I get it now. I can understand this is something I would do. And there's so, speaking to actual play people, you know, there's so much about the idea of RPGs are much more accessible because people just fucking get it now. They don't need to be mysterified. Mysterified, that's not a word. However.
It is now.
don't be mysterified, kids.
Sorry. If Willy Shakes can do it, you can make up a new word. That's the rule.
However, in the 1980s, it was weird.
Yeah.
Like, when I first saw D20, people didn't know what the hell that was. D&D looked odd. All those RPGs looked odd. And the Satanic Panic existed for a reason. I mean, there's a really, I forgot the name of the book. It's one of the. It's a book about RPGs and religion, which I named. It's not near me. I can't see the spine. But okay. Specifically, it made the argument. It's like there's a reason why religious people were kind of scared, you know, worried about D&D. Is oh no, it's fucking with the magic circle,
right?
There's, you know, religions are a bit like RPGs.
They've got their own rituals. They got their own sacred circle. Yeah,
hierarchies.
And it's taking the sacred circles and all that stuff and applying for a very different purpose. So like the overlap, they weren't wrong, but at the same time. A lot about, obviously I grew up in the Satanic Panic. It was very different in the UK's, but I definitely watched it in America and was aware of it all going down. But we've kind of won. You know, the fact that RPGs are so successful meant that I reckon we can reclaim the Satanistic imagery from the 80s and apply it to a game again. And for me, that was the thing. Let's pretend they are evil things that drag you to another dimension. Let's make it like a magic ritual where we have to pass the dice around. And let's treat those items as these weird, iconic, diabolical objects. Because there's a friction of power there, you know what I mean? Like, let's pretend it is.
It's a bit witchy.
Yeah, witchy. Yeah. Like, so I lent into so much of the witchiness, and that's fun, you know what I mean? And that kind of digs back to the observation, but that there is so much of the stuff that is ritualized in RPGs, and we've kind of stepped away and made it safer. But oh, no, it is sacred. What we're doing is sacred, and dice were a sacred object in so many cultures.
They're the hands of fate, the expression of... you know, divine will, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's
exactly.
Yeah, there's a great. I can't remember. I did it in that bloody essay, but there's a great paper about how theatre, sport, and games. They're all very, very similar. It's just some use external forces. Some use fate to essentially change the outcome, whereas
others are pure tests of skill.
Skill or you know, just rote memorization. Hopefully there's not going to be too many
interpretation of something.
Fate in a production of Hamlet.
But it's an interpretation of something. So they all use a kind of different lever to move things. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that I guess that means, you know, chance and the mechanics are super central to it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And I wanted to, I guess I'll introduce this question from one of our fans.
Yeah.
I don't want to seg into it. I feel kind of a nice place to put it.
We've not got that many, so we can kind
seg them in. So this is the one about balance. Do you want to explicitly read it so I don't muck it up?
Absolutely. I believe this is from Giorgio. Do you think that a TTRPG system always needs to be balanced? And how did you approach this question with Dai?
Short answers. Any question which says the word always will always get a no from me. There's always exceptions.
Sorry, you should always look both ways before crossing. That's a fact.
Maybe not. Maybe being chased by a monster and it'll slow you down. Yep. You've been eaten. You know what I mean? There's always an
what
exception.
What if you're being chased by the monster but you still get hit by the car? Sorry. I'm such a little contrarian.
Well, yeah, but you're definitely going to be hit by the monster. You might get hit by the car. This is all we're going to talk about for the next 20 minutes. Short answers. Like, balance, it's one of the things. There's many great board games. Let's go to board games, because a lot about Dai is me lifting from stuff which isn't just RPGs. I said before we started, like, I think art is most interesting when it's taken from other places. Like, for me, RPGs are part of the larger spectrum of games. I mean, if you look at the end game of Dai, when you're all arguing about whether to go home or not, that's me being inspired by reality TV shows.
Yeah, it is. It's Survivor, you know? Isn't it?
Yeah, it's very simple.
I heard you reference Drag Race at a certain point, but maybe that was just me fading off into nighttime.
I forget what I said about Drag Race. But, you know, the point of all those reality TV shows, the rules are simple, but the people are complicated. Mm. And depending what different people you put in, you get different results. However, if they go into balance, like, look at, there's a board game, like, sort of like, let's go to an old board game, which is Illuminati, it's not one I would necessarily play now, but Illuminati was entirely based, this conspiracy-based game where people are trying to take over the world. And some of the power classes are just better than the other ones. If you're playing the Bavarian Illuminati, you are better than other people. However, the game is about the fact that the power imbalance means everyone's immediately going to hate you. It's a game of, like, warring secret societies. You're immediately the big target. That game is based around the fact this person is more powerful. So, bringing that back to Dai, yes, it's a short answer. The problem is, like, I don't know how you would have found this. Like, obviously, Dai's math's pretty solid. It's pretty bad, you know. It's designed to work inside certain numbers of dice pools.
Love a dice pool. As someone who's bad with maths, love a dice pool. So
that was totally, we could talk a lot about it. One of my entire aims was to remove maths. As in, I wanted as little math as possible in Dai. It's about recognizing shapes. That's kind of, but that's a different topic. I should reprint my, I've lost this because it was in the beta at some point, but I did my kind of designer notes, as in my goals for Dai. And that's not online anymore. I should just stick it in my newsletter.
Recognizing shapes would also be great if there was a mechanic to literally dance in an RPG, but I'll just float that one and you can sort it out.
I do like dancing.
Yeah, if you can just sort that out later, you make that game.
Well, I guess when you're making characters that, you know, classes that everyone has to play, you don't want them to be too asymmetrical because you don't want anyone at the table to feel like
left
behind. Is that something that came in playtesting, or?
That was actually the flip. As in, I wanted Dai to mystify the other characters from each other. So, like, the core mechanics, the core mechanics are very simple. As you know, but the specific class mechanics are bespoke to each one. Everyone has a very different way of interacting with the world.
Yeah.
And so I wanted the other players maybe not even to know what the other people can do that well. As in, my God, they can do that. As in, you know what I mean? That kind of, because I talked about the remystification of, you know, treating the dice like objects. The other side was like trying to create that. And the other side of Dai, when the GMing is, you know, it's putting more power in the GM's hand than is traditional a lot of indie RPGs anymore, in terms of, like, instead of like just asking the players for stuff, it's you ask the players for stuff and then the GM twists it. So the world is fundamentally unknowable, which I find an interesting part of classical RPGs. However, to get around to the actual balance question is, like, there's a part of Dai where I wanted them roughly balanced because it's quite important for the end game, because they've got to all to basically be able to kill each other.
Yeah.
Sure, you know?
Do. And also close to one shot each other.
Yeah, we got voiced.
Yeah, not guaranteed, but like you've got a pretty good chance.
Yeah, that's the thing. Ours came down to a voice roll. Our final fight came down to, and it was like It was one or two successes. It was a knife edge,
a
right?
A voice roll and then a final cheat from the GM, which failed, which is a 50-50.
Yeah. So I guess the balance is more about equal kind of scope rather than numerical balance. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a little bit of numerical balance because you've got to work out how many hit points people have, you know, how much health, all that kind of stuff. But also it's balanced. It's the way I used to say it. I've made sure everyone's overpowered.
Yeah, yes. It does feel that way. It does feel that way.
And it doesn't matter. Like, in the extreme case, oh, no, I can do 10 health and I can do 4 health. The fact that people only have 3 health means they, you know, they're equally able to kill each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't even like it. I imagine that someone might have a crazy build that does that. But, like, there is, as long as players are able to actually put their will upon the world, it's okay. So that's the thing. There's quite a lot of, like, low-level balancing and make sure people can basically do that amount of stuff. But, like, it's not really a combat game. Most, apart from that final encounter, and even the final encounter is much more about the, are you going to stab people? You know, that, you know, it's not a game about combat, even though I think the combat rules, you know, work. So, yeah, it was always on my mind, and occasionally got an ability that was way too much. Like, I cut the, originally all the classes had an exploding D6. So every 6 exploded in the system, which just obviously slowed the game to stupidly with our big dice pool. But then the fall had basically, they explode, their D6s, they had that ability just themselves. And that led to the fall basically being able to roll a lot of specials almost constantly. If you've got a 4 dice pool.
Which makes them thematically chaotic and unpredictable. Yeah. And
But it was too swingy. You know what I mean? As in it was just, they got the point. And also, like, the chance of it blowing out was way too high. So in the final game, it gets to, it explodes once. So it's a chance for an extra success, which is much more limited. So yeah, occasionally I was aware that, oh no, this is way too much. But, like, at the same time as that basic game level, you've also got the second set of powers, which are the narrative level stuff. Like, the fools giving away their dice, the masters cheating, or, like, overcharging your gun. They are, your emotion knights killing armies. You know what I mean? Like, that stuff is so grotesquely overpowered. Yeah.
and we were all in on, like, hey, we get flashbacks. Use your flashbacks. Yeah. Like, we really gamed those sometimes. Yeah. We were like, right, I need to come up with a flashback because I need an extra dice.
I had a post-it note on my book saying, remind everyone to use their flashbacks.
And it's such a cool narrative tool to be like, if you can tell a better story in this moment, you get a bonus. Mm. I think that's really good to kind of reflect to reward the narrative mechanics as much as the dice themselves.
Was it also a thing of trying to, because the longer you go and die, the longer you're in the world of Die or in this fantasy world, were the flashbacks a good way to kind of remind the characters and the paragons both of the real world so that it's, you know, because you want both sides to be tempting. You want it to be tempting to go back to your real world where it's all nice and safe, and you also want it to be tempting to stay in this fantasy world. Was it a kind of thing to be able to touch base back with reality?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, like, you can actually flash back to the real world as much as you like, but kind of like, I put the specifically that was, let's give a little mechanical thing to sort of kick people to engage with the real world, because there's plus I could just say yes, you know, I mean, the joking yes answers. No, you've completely explained what I want. But one of the problems of, like, narratives is, like, you know, they've got that internet thing where I wrote an essay about this in one of the betas. It got cut for the full game for obvious reasons. It was too long. But, like, you know, that people talk about, like, how sad Luke Skywalker is when Obi-Wan Kenobi dies. Spoilers. You know, like...
We'll bleep that. It's fine. Like,
but Princess Leia is pretty much doesn't care about Alderaan. You know, Princess Leia goes, oh, no, and then gets on with it.
I find that very feminine.
No, but also, Luke had his aunt and uncle murdered, like, early on, and he kind of gets over that very quickly. The reason why that isn't because anything to do with the characters, what it is, because that Obi-Wan is much more real to the audience than Alderaan is, because we spent a lot of time with Obi-Wan. That's the thing about RPGs. If the longer you spend in the fantasy world, the more the fantasy world becomes real, and the real world becomes fantasy, or, like, a memory. And that's one of the things, like, there's so much of the GM advice is always ask about the persona. Like, if I'm running a combat, especially the first combat, like, almost every role will be, okay, how does that feel? Or, like, you've just seen your girlfriend murder somebody. How do you feel about that to somebody else? You know, always trying to ground it in that way. And the flashback mechanic was my one big hammer to make sure that even the most mechanically minded players will be thinking about the real world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's something your group does, like, this is not common, or it's not part of the core game, is you gave your characters, as in not the personas, names.
Yeah.
Like, and that's deliberately not mentioned in the game. Because obviously some players will do it, but like the second you give the persona, the character a name, they become a little bit more real. And like, I want to, and I'm trying to encourage players to think about, oh no, you're, the persona is the real person. The character is like suit you, somebody you become.
Well, that...
That might have been...
became a thing where, you know, one of the characters didn't want to use their name. They've kind of refused.
Yeah.
And others bounced back and forth with it. So it became another kind of emotional lever to see who was invested in the fantasy.
There was also just, there was a little thing to necessitate that, which is that we're an audio-only... we're an audio-only format and I have wanted to play Die as soon as the comic came out, and I flipped, you know, was reading the author's notes, and it's, oh my God, it's also going to be playable? Hell yeah. And I was thinking, how the fuck do I tell this story that's going to have, it's a story of, you know, Ellen Phil, I say the rest, not to disparage my fellow players, but just because there's a lot of us, but, you know, Ellen Phil at a table, but also the personas of our characters, and then those personas as paragons. I just wanted a way to easily differentiate between everyone.
For listeners, who might be doing other things like driving or kitchen work, you know, cleaning.
That's interesting that it's not common, because I found it was a great touchstone to really hammer home when I wanted to stick the knife in
the persona or the paragon.
Yeah. So that's really interesting.
It's true. Like, it's I would say it's not common, because it's obviously a choice people make. But at the same time, and I don't think it's a bad choice. It's just aware that especially more inexperienced RPGs, they start thinking, oh no, am I an elf now?
Then? Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, you're still the real person. So that's a way to basically make sure the conversation for like new players are focused on the basics, as in, oh no, I'm someone from the real world who's now in a funny body and a world. And as long as they remember that, the end game work. But like the players have all, I mean, like, it's great. This is what I said at the beginning, like the throwing different personas in changes everything. I mean, like, I remember, like, I've had games where like the persona obviously refused to pick up the dice almost forever, which is fine. That's a great game. One person being dragged around unwillingly who doesn't have any powers. That's if that player wants that, that's fun. I mean, the first or second game I ever ran, the full character basically had a complete nervous breakdown and they transformed their fool, but they didn't use their powers once and just basically had to be carried and protected and they're hiding in corners. And they end up winning the game, not winning, but, you know, making the master.
The master stroke at the end.
Yeah, the master hugs the fool, and the fool hugs the master and it says, please, you know, and it's a really beautiful moment of this queer relationship. So that's a big moment for the characters, you know what I mean? And they did involve them, you know, turning away from the mechanics is also embracing the mechanics, if that makes sense, because it's about what you do with these bodies. So, I mean, that's what interests me about Die, it's all about the people you make and, of course, the people you are. So, yeah, it's fascinating choices.
I have one specific question that I want to ask before maybe we segue into some of our submitted questions. We were talking before about The Fallen. As you were talking about The Fallen, I thought, oh, fuck, Phil doesn't know this, because we didn't have any, we didn't have any players return as Fallen per se. And there were, I did forbid them for reading past a certain point in the comics. Just because I wanted a few aces up my sleeve and for them to discover things in real time. How much does secrecy tie in, or how much secrecy is there in the game? Because, you know, like you said, you wanted there to be an element of surprise, and everything in Die seems to be coming to life as you play it. The game unfurls, things become real as you say them. You have no idea what's going to happen when someone picks up their die.
You don't know what powers the others have. You don't know where they've been.
Exactly.
Since they've been
teenagers.
And
you don't know what happens when you die in the game. So how do you kind of toe the line between keeping secrets between players and personas?
I'm not that interested in secrets. What I'm interested in is uncertainty. You know what I mean? As in, like the players may know if they're going to be the Neo, but you don't really know you're going to be the Neo until you get the dice passed to you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's the magic moment of being given the dice is basically, here's the One Ring. Bilbo, or whatever. You know? And that's like, you may know that you're going to get that dice because you've talked about it, but that moment is magical. And like, in all uncertain, you know what I mean? So in other words, even if people know the comic really well, they can't be sure that's going to happen when they die.
Yes, and that, true. You know what I
mean? Like, there's certain other ways of running Fallen, and that's what I'm interested in. Like, because having playtested it all the way through, like, the first playtest, no, Die didn't exist, the comic. So people were playing, didn't know anything about it. And like, and then all the way through, we got people, more people who've read bits of the comic, yeah, or like some of the comic. You know, you always have mixed groups. And I think what you really get from a mixed group or any group is, if you know the comic back to front, what you get is people who can lean into the choices, as you know what's on the risk. So they know what a Neo might be like. They know what the sort of stories Die tell, so you can lean into it. Conversely, the your players don't know, you get surprised. You genuinely get the, what the hell is going on? And both of these are really cool. The other side is like, when I say uncertainty is more interested in secrecy, because I'm quite pro players, like, player information is generally open in Die. As in, like, it's like if you have a crush on somebody, it's not like the crush is secret. You probably want to say the crush. Oh yeah, I'm in love with this one. But in Persona Gen, oh, I'm in love and I've never told them.
Yeah.
And then the other players all get to lean into it, because there's nothing better in a game than somebody who has a crush on somebody else being basically tormented by that person without them realizing. Of course, that only works if the other player actually knows this person has a crush.
Or the classic, everybody else knows,
but they didn't.
They
know.
They don't know that everyone. It's obvious to everyone. That sort of thing. Yeah.
This is what I mean. It's like, so that. So secrecy per se is almost an enemy of drama, because secrecy is the opposite of care. You have to care. You have to understand to care. Conversely, like, uncertainty is amazing. Not being that's why dice are magical. Like,
yeah,
this, when we took the reason why the story becomes alive when you roll the dice is the okay, what happens now? You mentioned the whole kind of role for the dictator. That's one reason why the system leans quite short combats, because a slow attrition isn't interesting. That only the last dice roll, whether someone lives or dies, is interesting. So, like, making the dice have more meaning is like one of the things that a lot of my favorite RPGs do to increase that. As in, oh, we turn into the dice, and now the story will fundamentally change. So that's what uncertainty.
That principle of say yes or roll.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is if it's not interesting. If failure isn't interesting,
then
don't bother.
Then don't bother. Then it just happens.
Yeah. And that's kind of embodied in the game. Yeah. We're running past our hour. Let's make sure absolutely. That the guys who submitted questions get their questions in.
I guess this one kind of feeds into, as we're coming off talking about, you know, personas and paragons, Hurricane Hawk /Paul has asked, sorry, I copied the whole thing. So it starts, hot damn.
Hot damn, indeed.
He was very excited that we would get to talk to you. Hot damn, what was the hardest archetype to create?
I'll tell you, the master. Not the GM master, but the actual player master, because I basically spent the whole Die development up to a certain point working on the five paragons. As I bounced back and forth between them, like, it was often a case of, like, they all sort of existed in a way, then we playtested, and then one got a bit more work, and clearly this other one was, oh no, this is shit compared to the other one now, it's just boring. So, like, I got to move them up and down in the mix, so that they all kind of developed at the same time and became sort of even. Then at the end, we have to make a player master. Then it's like, okay, now the player master is right at the bottom of the scale and all the other classes are quite good.
you had a big mountain to climb with that one.
Exactly, to make it catch up. I mean, of course, it's still not a part of the core game. It's like, my aim was to make the player master, what is now the player master, just the master. And I got talked out of that by RRD because the GM doesn't need to worry about that. The GM has so much cognitive load, they don't need to have all the stuff the player master needs. So, and that just improved the game enormously. It really was the right choice. But the player master was definitely, okay, how can I even do this? Especially because I had the core idea of, like, the player master has cheating, which is very improvisational, very much like the Godbinder. And then you've got the rules, which is one of the most mechanic-y things in the game. And so combining these rules, you get to the abilities. And early on, I was trying to make it actually, go back to the last question, or a couple of questions, about balanced. As in, like, can we make this really work? And I got to the point and I realised, A, it's really hard, but B, no, I don't think it's interesting. Die's a softer game than this. You've got to make the rules. Well, yeah, it's about combining the rules to make spells, but it's got to be more soft-edged than that in terms of, like, you know, these are not guidelines because they're pretty solid, but they're still kind of meant to be tools to mix. They're spices in a recipe, not like cogs. So that was kind of like those sort of philosophical stuff was tricky with the master, but like there's all manner of like emotion night was tricky for quite a while. Dictator was like, actually had a late period rewrite. The safety proofing the Dictator was a nightmare. Like Keanu and
controlling other people's emotions. Yeah, it's a big, super heavy. Yeah.
I must say, I do appreciate though in Die that it gives it that gravitas and it gives it that weight because, I mean, it's the tagline, right? Of you're a bard if everyone was shit scared of bards. And that's what happens in a lot of other RPGs, but it's kind of glossed over because that ain't the genre to dwell on the fact that you just, with your words, splintered someone's mind. So I really like that it...
It lampshades that. It's like, this is actually a really
fucked up. Yeah, you're fucked up for doing this.
So much of the paragraphs is that, you know, these are kind of like... you know, taking stuff seriously. That's kind of like the definition of deconstruction for me, is that, you know, when we take stuff seriously, it wasn't necessarily taken seriously in the original text and run with it. I mean, that's the same as the Godbinder in that way. They're like the ridiculousness of, not ridiculousness, but if you think about it, like, what? It's a miracle. My God has healed me slightly. Did he heal the whole wound? No. Only D8 health points. You know what I mean? Like, that's ludicrous. In a fun way. And then the Godbinder takes that and runs. I forgot something else to say. Oh, but Paragons. Oh, it's gone. Doesn't matter.
You can always hop in our Discord, Kieran, if you'd like to know. Well, people can always hop in your Discord, the Die Discord, where they can just ask you stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I have lots to say about the Neo, which I played, because the Neo has a bajillion options, which is crazy to me, like how differently you can build the Neo. And to me, the Neo is really interesting as opposed to the Dictator because I got to use my powers like all the time. They were like really flavorful. I took the Blink Teleporter and I just bamfed everywhere. It was hilarious and fun. Whereas the Dictator is almost afraid
to
use their powers at all sometimes. Yeah. And that felt like it was a balancing thing. It's like my powers might not be like earth-shattering, but I can use them at the drop of a hat as long as I've got my gold, right? At the beginning of the session, I just go nuts. So it felt kind of that was a balance as well.
Yeah.
But did you take it? You came with a lot of options for the Neo. Did that did that take a long time?
No, I'm just a bit, sorry, like a big old cyberpunk nerd.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
That's kind of the reason I gave Phil the die.
Like, obviously, like, cyberpunk was one of the games. I played first edition cyberpunk back in the day.
Yeah,
like,
nice.
And then 2020 later. So originally, the Neo had like 23 gifts, I think, in the draft I handed over to Grant. And Grant went, no, Kieran, no.
Each with 20 different upgrades.
3,000 words, you say?
But actually, what Grant did, because actually the Neo was the class he did, he actually had the most hands in actually meddling with. And like, it was like he took the 20, you know, these 23 gifts and merged them into the 8 or so gifts we have. And just in that kind of like, and then we moved a lot of the things that were gifts into upgrades.
Upgrades.
And that kind of way. It's just more meaningful now.
Choices. The choices matter more.
Yeah. I mean, you did have a big if there. As long as I've got gold, that's a big if.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And that turns on GM, what the GM's doing and all that stuff. But the kind of the desperate hunger. Oh my God, I'm useless every morning. Unless you've got the upgrades, obviously. But like, even then, like, what are the choices? That's, you know, that gives a very different sort of behavior. If I was to sort of talk about the Paragons broadly, most of the Paragons present a problem that they have to deal with. Like, the Neo is gold. The Godbinder is debt. You know, and these are basically, they're normally quite inwards-looking. And so they've got limitations based around that. The Dictator is different. The Dictator is a power fantasy. As in, you can basically, if you want to, you can use this as much as you like. There's no problems at all. But, you know, the problems are all, you know, because upper classes are problems for you. The Dictator's are problems for everyone else. And that's the awful thing about the Dictator. It's as long as you're happy to treat people like things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that's of course, as we all know, evil.
It's the thing in the creation of, hey, you get what you want, but maybe that's not exactly what you want.
Yeah.
Maybe you wanted a person to kneel. Maybe you didn't want their bones to fucking physically shatter from kneeling.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Oops, you did it anyway.
That's right.
Oh, we do have one last fan question. So this comes from Targonat. I hope I've pronounced that's spelt like it sound or sounds like it's spelt. If you have any advice to give to aspiring authors or designers, what would it be? I know partially it's what you said before of just do it.
That's the punk rock bit. Yeah, just do it. Here, you know, it's there's a famous page in Sniffing Glue, the 1970s punk fanzine, as a hit. This is the core, this is the another, this is the third, now form a band. Like, it's just a diagram of the three chords and then saying, now you can form a band, you can do it. If my advice for aspiring authors, I mean, that's kind of die. I was chatting to Fraction finally read the rule book. I was waiting to him, but he'd seen the rule book and it was like, this is the closest anyone's going to get to how to do comics the Kieran Gillen way. Like, explicitly, like, I've ritualized how a Kieran Gillen comic works and turn it into a game, so you can do it at home. I'm no obsolete.
In that way, do you kind of center collaboration then as part of your process?
In some ways, yes. But in another way, like, I don't think it's really about collaboration. I'm more saying that this is, you can do this. And I think this has come back to me as a zine kid. I think being a creative person, not for money or anything, not just being creative is something that improves your worldview enormously, because you are changing the world you exist in. You're externalizing your demons. You know yourself better. I genuinely think creativity is this enormously powerful thing that shouldn't be taken from people. And like, I wanted to encourage people to do that. And that's kind of like that. So I'm sure that entirely answers the question, but at least part of that is like, here I am.
Yeah. I mean, how could any answer be?
It's sort of like, this is a little bit, well, this is how I do it.
Yeah.
I hope that helps.
How could there be any fully satisfying answer to how to become a creative? You know, there's no 12 steps to success there.
Actually, it's worth actually flipping the question. So me showing how to do it is not implying it's the only way to do it, as you say. It's that kind of like, one of the things I regularly say, somebody who taught himself everything, is that, you know, we all build our own tool set, and it's all writing is about finding stuff that works for you, and creativity is about, okay, what do you love? And then you go, okay, how do they do it? But like, not everyone does this. Some people are much more instinctive, but I think they do it subconsciously. And then, okay, what's my favorite work of art? Then sit down and really fucking look at it. Okay, how did, you know, we talked about the bear earlier. It's like, how did the bear actually do that? Why am I falling in love with all these characters? What's the director doing? Like, how many times I've read Watchmen and counted panels and looked at stuff, you know? By taking that, I'm a deconstructivist kind of guy, so that's how I approach it. But like, you really just think about the art, take it seriously, because I guarantee you the people creating it did.
Yeah, I'm
wow,
a big,
that's not as serious.
I'm a big proponent of serious fun.
Yeah,
it's like fun is fun when you take it seriously.
Oh,
that's when you can really push it out there.
we come from acting school, obviously, where the most fun is you. If anyone were to look in the doorway of a bunch of actors warming up or playing their games, be like, what a bunch of fucking idiots. It's only when you're like fully committed to like, nope, I'm going to zip when you zap, that it really becomes, like you said, sacred. We make things sacred by
giving it our attention, right?
Giving it our passion and our love and fully committing to it. So I think that's a great answer.
That's great. On the note of what you're passionate about, what you're putting your passion into. Do you want to tell us and tell the people listening what it is you're working on at the moment? Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to big up while you have the chance?
Well, my day job as a comic creator. I'm still writing X-Men stuff, which will be going on. I've said that I'm sort of heading towards the end of the story, but I've got like about 8 or 9 issues left to write, something like that, which is fun. Actually, by the time, this is out, I probably would have, you know, I'll be obviously written a lot more. So X-Men stuff. I'm working on my next set of comic projects. Like, none of them are announced yet, but if you follow my newsletter, which is Kieran Gillen Unbuttoned Down, it's linked from everywhere online. You'll get that. But it's really interesting and fun to dig into new stuff, which is kind of, really, I'm somebody who got into creativity to do my own stuff. I love working in other people's universes, but for me, it's not the real work. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, you just can't do the amount of work I put for create your own book into a Marvel book, because it's the vessel does not hold. I mean, like, and I stress this, I'm somebody who read all of The Idiot by Dostoevsky for like an issue of Immortal X-Men. Like, I don't phone it in, but it's just that you can only do so much. So that's all fantastic. I'm really enjoying that stuff. In terms of games, RRD have just announced the first Die expansion, or rather, a few months ago they announced it.
Yes.
Time this comes out. It's called Die Adventures. I've written one adventure. There's two other great adventures in there. It's going to be the first of four we're going to do and see how it goes. And it's really me kind of, I mean, there's so much in the manual, as you know, but like a lot of what I wanted to do with these adventures is show other ways of playing Die. And I mean that kind of, the stuff we allude to in the book a bit, but like, you know, let's go even further. Like, the adventure I'm doing is called Bizarre Love Triangles, and I wanted to write a hex crawl in Die.
Yeah, nice.
And also something which is a bit more like a pre-generated adventure. Like, I mean that in a kind of course, like, it's so informational. Let's show people, oh, you can make a pre-gen, and this is how you do it. Like, Total Party Kill on the manual's a bit like that, but this is that, but more so. So you've got what happens in each of the 20 regions of the map. And specifically, the Persona Gen is written as such. So there's certain questions you ask in Persona Gen which tie into the adventure. Like, this encounter uses this question you asked earlier. And people can read that and go, oh, wait, I get it. By narrowing the persona group a little bit more, I can actually write encounters about that archetypal person. I mean, have I got time to say... I'm going to do one example.
You got as much time as you want,
you got time.
This is the one encounter I'm spoiling because it's because Bizarre Love Triangle, the high concept is you're all people hung upon an ex. You're like 20, 30-something hipster people who hang out in a bar or somewhere like that. And all of you are iconic. Like, one person was is unrequited. One person is fickle and has broken a lot of people's hearts. One person was left by that partner.
Is it the something about Mary?
Yeah. Something about Mary.
Or it sounds completely to me like any D&D group.
Yeah. But it's definitely the key thing. All of them are just different. You know what I mean? Like, so you've got someone who abandoned their partner, despite the fact they love them. And, you know, all this kind of... So these are the archetypes. And then you've got the GM, who was just fed up with this shit. Can we please stop talking about the exes? Let's play this game instead.
So what's that one called?
That's called Bizarre Love Triangles, is that adventure.
Right.
But specifically, the encounter I use is... The fickle is the one I use, who ends up being the fool. The fickle is somebody who's broke hearts for reasons. And it's like... And of course, you get to define that. You know, it could be completely... Like, oh, they just always cheat on them. They just always do. Two, they just weren't they weren't the one. You know, I need to find the one. You know, but so these are all reasons to like break someone's heart and move on. But their adventure is you explore the map and eventually hit this region. And it's basically a woodland, so everything's very calm and tranquil and very beautiful. There's no food here, no sustenance, but it's very tranquil. Bird songs is singing. What's your one line you would say to people? What's your pillow talk? You ask the fool. And so the bird song is singing the pillow talk. Bird song, you know. And then you go in and it's okay. Where did you take them for in the morning? First morning after, where did you take them? And like, you know, it's some cafe or whatever, and that's in the middle of the woods. Except this cafe is covered in blood. The only place that isn't covered in blood is the seat where you were sitting. So you're going there closer. So you eventually explore this. And at this point, D6 X's turn up like a hipster Nazgul coming out of the woods.
The evil X's from Scott Pilgrim. Oh, no.
Exactly. No, I think these are righteous X's.
Yeah, righteous X's. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they only are going for the fool. That's the part. That's the encounter. So they're very powerful. And if any of them killed the fool, what happens is they don't actually die. They're just basically, well, the GM turns to another player and says, I want you to describe in detail what happened the first night of heartbreak for this person.
Oh, wow.
So they get to feel it.
It's more like John Tucker must die.
Yeah, and then the fool does it, and then they disappear, and then the other one Nazguls keep on coming up for the adventure. So basically, the party is being pursued at that point onwards by these exes who all basically want to force the fool to relive every single one of these things.
Good for them.
Anyway, good for them.
I'm here for it.
Well, if that's not a preview of the new book, I don't know what is.
Exactly. You know, I use that as a good example because it's quite solid. But you see what I mean in terms of that's going to, because you get the axis will change depending on the player, the location will change, all the deals will change, but it's still a pre-generated encounter. You know what I mean? That's something that you can plug in and run. And that's kind of the aim of that. And the other adventures have different aims. One of them is it's basically a collectible card game adventure. So it's basically using you build a collectible card deck and use that to generate the adventure. And the writer Nathan has basically made rules for how you interpret collectible cards. And no matter what deck you're playing with. So that's what really interested. Different ways of doing die. And also, whilst I'm saying you can run them out of the box, if any pre-generated game, people just nick the pieces they like. That's the other side of it. Yeah, you know what I mean? So
More tools.
Oh,
and I'm doing a small itch game myself, which hopefully will be released relatively soon. I have to play test it one more time. It's called, do you know Brindlewood Bay?
Yes, I love Brindlewood Bay.
I love it. Basically, the game's called How Do Aliens Do It? And it's basically you play teenagers in an information-scarce society who have gathered together to try to work out how sex works for their species. So it basically uses the Brindlewood Bay mechanic.
The 90s all over again.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I wrote it. It's explicitly to try to...
What it was like growing up in the 90s.
Exactly. Generally, there was one of my friends saw someone online saying it was so difficult us growing up. Obviously, there's no source about sex except, the internet. And of course, we laugh so hard. You should have been around when I was a kid.
Magazines.
And it's a game about that. Yes.
the stash of like magazines in the woods. In the exactly.
Yes. And you flick, basically the game, you generate, like, you draw the, okay, I'm pretty sure sex involves our tentacles. Okay, I think sex involves our telepathic powers. And then they theorize to work out a way sex could work. You roll to see if it's true or not. It's probably not to begin with. And then you start, you know, and then you carry on and carry on. And it ends up being about queerness and, okay, what's queer in your society? And then, cause depending, so the dice and the conversation basically guides you and you get an idea of how sex may work in your society. And obviously it's very playful and very funny. Because it's you know, it's just hilarious. So you're all playing these very confused teenagers.
Because sex is funny. We need to say that more.
Exactly.
Everything biological is funny.
Pretty much. I work with kids. I'm dining out on fart jokes every day.
So you're playing? Anyway, hopefully I'll release that soon.
That might show up on our monthly one shot. Who knows?
You better believe. Well, several months from now, I guess, when this...
Hey, maybe you can... come and run it with us.
please do.
It's actually another embodiment game. So, like, you know, the whole die, you in that when you're in Cardra and you're playing your real self, you play as you sit around the table and you're playing as the aliens. So the funniest bit in the last game I played was it involves tentacle and eyes. And then someone said, look at our tentacles. They're the same shape as our eyes. And we all sort of mime putting our tentacles on our eyes. And then we go, anyway.
This is so adorable. I'm so in love with it. It's so cute. Well, thank you. Sorry, I have to catch my breath now. It's too freaking cute. Thank you so much, Kieran, for coming on to this show, for just chatting to us in general, but also we had a blast playing Die. Truly, I think this has been one of the most impactful games I've ever run as a GM. Just thank you so much. So that's big round of applause for Kieran Gillen, our guest for this episode. And as we wrap up, this is indeed the last episode pertaining to Die When the Party's Over. But don't worry, we'll be back. We'll be back with something new, something very special, because next episode will be the beginning of season 10 for Roll to Cast. I am relinquishing the GM burden around the shackles around my neck, and I'm going to pass them over to Phil. You go, you poor bastard.
Yes,
tell us about what we're doing.
Next up, we are playing a little bit of Dune, Adventures in the Imperium. We'll be building our own little noble house and navigating the vagaries of the far future politics of the Dune world. I love Dune, so I'm very, very excited. So I hope you join us next week for our episode 0.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you, everyone. And we will see you next week for a whole new adventure in Roll to Cast. Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to When the Party's Over, which is a Roll to Cast production. The best way to find us is on Twitter, Discord, and our Patreon. All our podcasts are on Acast, Spotify, YouTube, and all good podcatchers. You can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/rolltocast. The Die RPG is copyright of Lemon Inc. Limited and Stephanie Hahn Studio. The underlying game systems and mechanics are copyright of Roward, Rook, and Deckard Limited. All rights reserved.
Hello and welcome back to Roll to Cast, your favorite. Oh, sorry, I immediately choked on my way out. Let's redo that, shall we? Nah, come on. It's rough, just like you like this podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.